Hi, you're listening to Let's Talk Chemistry, a podcast by ChemTalk. On today's episode, we interview Dr. Eric Decker, professor and head of Department of Food Science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He shares with us today his research on lipid oxidation and a lot of food tips. We hope you enjoy.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Chemistry. My name is Erin, and I am one of your co-hosts.
And I'm Yumsa. Today we're talking about all things food science with Dr. Eric Decker. Dr. Decker is a distinguished professor and head of the Department of Food Science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. We are so excited to have him as our special guest today.
Yes, we've all heard of the saying, you are what you eat. And this episode will prove just how closely tied we are to the chemistry of what we consume. So sit back, relax, and maybe even grab a snack as we kick off with Dr. Decker introducing himself and his background.
I got a BS in biology at Penn State. Then I went on, got a master's degree in food science and nutrition at Washington State, and then a PhD in food science and nutrition at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. When I was an undergrad, I used to work in kitchens to make extra money. And so I always liked to cook, and I was a biology student. And as I got towards the end, it was pretty hard to find jobs in biology. So right at the end, my last semester, I think, I took a class in nutrition that was on food preparation. And it was really kind of the chemistry of cooking. And that's how I got the interest in culinary arts, as well as my interest in science.
Wow, what a journey. It's amazing how the smallest things can completely change your career trajectory, like that one nutrition class did for Dr. Decker. Just some food for thought for our audience of young scientists to keep an open mind and try new things.
Agreed. Recently, I've also added a culinary science and nutrition minor to my biochemistry major after years of wanting to integrate my love for food and science. Hearing Dr. Decker's journey is so inspiring. In fact, Dr. Decker is an extremely accomplished researcher in food science and is currently listed as one of the most highly cited scientists in agriculture.
That makes me wonder, what drives Dr. Decker to commit his talents to this field specifically? What makes food science so important to study?
Chemistry spans a great portion of the food industry, from flavors and additives to preservatives to even chemical engineering, which has a lot of the unit operations in the way foods are made. So it's fun to be able to see your science in the grocery store. It's also fun to be able to eat your science. It's a really fun career. So part of my passion was food, you know, and I got the opportunity to use my science on my passion.
Food science is truly all around us. This explanation makes me feel better about my chronic procrastinating and baking, aka procrastibaking, since it's just another form of science. After all, converting cups to grams is a form of dimensional analysis, and tweaking existing recipes comes from experience and intuition, just like science, right?
Right, Erin. Whatever brings you peace of mind. I bet our listeners are curious about Dr. Decker's research interests centered around lipid oxidation. But first, what is a lipid and how does it undergo oxidation?
Great question. Lipids, along with carbohydrates, proteins, and nucleic acids, are one of the four key macromolecules. Types of lipids include fats, waxes, and oils. They have so many essential functions, such as composing a large part of the cell membrane, helping to move and store energy, absorbing vitamins, and making hormones.
Lipids must be incredibly essential to all life.
Indeed, they are. But lipids are also vulnerable to oxidation, which is a chemical deterioration of the lipids at the carbon-carbon double bonds, also known as unsaturated bonds. Oxidation occurs through a series of complex chemical reactions between lipid unsaturated bonds and oxygen, generating free radicals that result in spoilage and rancidity. It's an inevitable process, but can be accelerated by various factors such as light exposure or high temperatures.
Right, and Dr. Decker has dedicated a large part of his career to studying this complex process. Let's hear what he has to say about lipid oxidation.
And this is because the unsaturated fatty acids in foods can go through a series of free radical reactions in the presence of oxygen to start to decompose into small molecules. So typically, the lipids that we'd be talking about in food would be their phospholipids, or triglycerides. In their original form, they're so big, they're not volatile. But as the fatty acids start to break down in the small molecules, they become volatile. And that has two consequences. One is that it impacts the quality of food because these have all kinds of primarily detrimental smells and aromas. But what we're learning more recently, that these compounds can also have toxic effects. So when the oils become oxidized or the food becomes oxidized, that has a health risk as well.
Lipid oxidation definitely sounds like a significant challenge to overcome for food quality and preservation. What does Dr. Decker say is his lab's focus on solving this issue?
Let's hear from our expert.
But there are certain things like transition metals and certain enzymes which will make the reaction go much faster. On the other side, we look at how to prevent those reactions or not truly prevent them, because you can never stop them. You can always slow them down. And so we look at a lot of antioxidant technologies to determine different ways and different food systems that could be used to slow these reactions down. And basically, that helps then increase shelf life and decrease food waste. Foods are incredibly complex. As a food scientist, you deal with temperatures from minus 40 to 300 degrees Celsius. We deal with pHs from 3 to 8. We deal with ionic strengths all over the place. So when you look at the original biological material and how that's transformed into food, we get this huge complexity of heterogeneous systems. There are many cases very difficult to study, but because they're so different, the chemistry is very different from food group to food group. So lipid oxidation chemistry in a bottle of oil would be different than a bottle of salad dressing, which would be different than a breakfast cereal.
Increase shelf life and decrease food waste. I love these missions for his research.
It's so admirable how deeply Dr. Decker thinks about the implications of his work on food quality.
I wonder, though, if his research carries over into his personal life.
I mean, one thing is my whole family is very sensitive to rancidity. Many people don't know what rancidity is. And so if you go home tonight, or anybody that's listening, you go home, you should smell. If you have a bottle of oil, smell that bottle of oil. If it has any smell, it's rancid. The one exception to that is olive oil. Olive oil is not refined and has natural flavors from the olive oil. But anything like vegetable oil, corn oil, canola oil, if they smell, they're rancid. But other things like nuts, I'll come across nuts that are rancid very often. Nuts are very, very high in unsaturated fatty acids and are very susceptible to rancid. So I'm much more cautious. So I keep my vegetable oil in the refrigerator. If I buy once in a while, I buy olive oil on sale. I'll put it in the freezer. One of the best ways to control oxidation is to decrease temperature. You can't put your olive oil in the refrigerator because it will turn solid. But all your vegetable oils, you can put them in the refrigerator. And they'll keep much longer. You know, in our case at home, and I also buy small bottles of oil. But even the small bottles of oil, we'll have a hard time using it before it goes rancid if I leave it out at room temperature.
These are some awesome tips that I will definitely be using from now on.
Yes, I've always stored oil, butter, and even peanut butter in the fridge. As a baker, I like to make sure I always have these ingredients on hand in large quantities, so keeping them fresh is definitely a priority.
But other than proper storage of our food to prevent oxidation, what more can be done? Lipid oxidation, like you said, is inevitable, but there are ways to slow it down. Let's hear what Dr. Decker has to say about bioactive compounds that maintain lipid integrity.
What we try to do in the food industry now is find natural solutions. There are a lot of synthetic antioxidants that can be used to protect foods from oxidation, but people don't want those in their food. So we've been looking at different bioactive compounds from primarily plants to try to use those as natural antioxidants.
These strategies are particularly useful when applied to volatile lipids, such as omega-3s.
Omega-3s? I've heard about how they are really good for your health and present in fatty fish, correct?
Correct. Omega-3 fatty acids are healthy fats that support heart health and lower triglyceride levels. However, our body cannot make omega-3s from scratch, and thus we must get them from the food we eat. But do most of us consume enough omega-3s in our regular diets? Let's hear from Dr. Decker.
Anybody who's a vegetarian or vegan won't get omega-3. So they're actually, vegans are actually kind of at risk and have to be very careful about getting enough omega-3s. So lots of interest for brain health, for heart attacks, for different potential benefits. But, and you could take it as a supplement, you could take a pill, but most people rather get their nutrients from their food. And omega-3s, putting omega-3s in foods is very challenging because these oxidize about 20 to 40 times faster than most other fatty acids. Plus, when you get the oxidation products, when the fatty acids break down, you can smell the oxidation products at one part per billion.
I see where this is going. We can fortify foods with omega-3s.
Right. But unfortunately, omega-3s are quite challenging to put into foods.
So any oxidation of the omega-3 oils would cause rejection. They would, you know, if you put this in a yogurt and it oxidizes, it's going to taste like fish.
Fishy yogurt? I think that's officially the worst yogurt flavor to ever exist.
I agree, Erin. No matter how healthy it is, I highly doubt anyone would buy that. This is a great example of why research into lipid oxidation is so important. It increases the availability of key lipids and foods in our diets.
Most definitely. But scientists are also human and bound to make mistakes. Mistakes that can lead to dire consequences for global health. Trans fats, or partially hydrogenated fats, are now widely known to increase risk of coronary heart disease. However, food makers in the late 1900s began using trans fats to reduce rancidity and turn liquid oil into smooth and easily transportable solid fat.
To elaborate, trans fats are created by adding hydrogen to unsaturated fats, replacing the double bonds with hydrogens, hence the name hydrogenated fats. At the time, switching from fats like butter to a product made from healthier vegetable oils seemed to make sense, until scientists discovered that eating trans fats is even worse for your health.
Thus, the crackdown on trans fats began, and in 2018, the FDA officially banned trans fats from food in the U.S. Without trans fats, manufacturers were left having to deal with problems with shelf stability yet again, which is where scientists like Dr. Decker came in.
So trans fatty acids are produced by hydrogenation. The first thing that happens, so trans fatty acids have been linked to increased risk of heart disease. They're an unsaturated fat, but because of their conformation, they act more like a saturated fat. So they first were required to put on a nutrition back panel. And so companies started to reformulate their products to get the hydrogenated fat out because they didn't want to have trans fat on their label. And when they did that, one of the things that hydrogenation did is it got rid of the most unsaturated fatty acids. So it made the product much more stable against oxidation. So as they started to replace that hydrogenated oil, everybody started to have oxidation problems. And in many cases, they didn't do the shelf life studies. They didn't have time to do the proper shelf life studies. And so they had a lot of product recalls. And so that's why I'm probably the most active time in my career working with industry is so many companies started having shelf life issues, but because they took hydrogenated oils out of their products.
Dr. Decker has also served on different advisory committees. Here's more about that experience.
I was on a FDA committee on bovine encephalitis, spongiform encephalitis, which is we call mad cow disease. It's a common term for that. And that was very interesting. As more when I was working in the meats world and watching all the science unfold around that disease and the health risk to humans. More recently, I'm chairing Food Forum. The Food Forum is a convening activity at the National Academy of Sciences. And that forum brings together people from academics, industry, and government and consumer groups to discuss different kinds of issues and to learn about science and to also have the government people there so to help inform people about how to make proper policy based on science. So that's really been a lot of fun to have the interaction and get to meet and work with all the people that are in these different aspects of the food system.
Mad cow disease sounds like straight out of a scary movie.
I totally agree. To give a bit of chemistry behind it, this disease, scientifically known as bovine spongiform encephalopathy, as Dr. Decker mentioned, is caused by abnormal proteins called prions. Proteins can become misfolded, and these prions can then touch a normal protein and cause it to also become misfolded. The prions will then aggregate and form clumps and eventually cause damage to brain tissues.
That reminds me of a zombie outbreak.
I know, right? Mad cow disease causes cows to develop trouble walking and getting up. Once a cow starts to show symptoms, it gets sicker and sicker until it dies, usually within 2 weeks to 6 months. There is no treatment for it and currently no vaccine to prevent it. There's also no reliable way to test for mad cow disease in a live cow, which is especially concerning since humans can get the human form of mad cow disease by eating meat from sick cattle.
Well, I'm super glad that food scientists like Dr. Decker are collaborating with others to address such vital questions regarding food science and our health.
Yes, collaboration can be so powerful, as Dr. Decker agrees. When people come together, they bring unique skills and perspectives to the table. Sometimes it can feel like pieces of a puzzle fitting together perfectly. Let's hear more from him.
It's an awesome part of science because you learn so much from collaboration, right? So if you're just working in your own field, you don't grow that much. But when you start to work with other people, then you really start to grow. So the whole area of the health impact of lipid oxidation products, that's been through collaborations with Wudong Zhang, who's at the University of California, Davis. My background, I couldn't have got into that area, but by working with Wudong, we were able to do a lot of really nice stuff.
Collaborating with scientists, even in France, collaboration is a reminder that scientific knowledge is and should be a shared global treasure.
I totally agree with that, Yangsa. Dr. Decker closed out his interview with us with some advice for students and for potential food scientists.
My advice is follow your passion. Because if it's something you're excited about, it's something that really drives you to learn, that's how you'll become the best. So, you know, not just having great grades in the classroom is not everything. And what I found over my career is that the people that have the most passion about their degree or about their field are the most successful people.
Thank you, Dr. Decker, for sharing your knowledge and stories with the ChemTalk team. We had a blast.
And to our wonderful listeners, eat your science and search for what really gets you excited. And until next time, bye.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk Chemistry, a podcast by ChemTalk. We hope you enjoyed it. For more information on today's episode and countless chemistry resources, please visit our website at www.chemistrytalk.org.